Okay, it's, what's the date? September 25th of 2021. And on the third Saturday of September in 2008, I started this meeting. And except when I've been out of town on vacation, I've been here. And I was thinking about it, thinking about my son Curtis this morning, looking at his picture, and thinking about my Heavenly Father. And I owe everything to him. When I started this meeting, people thought it was like an ego thing for me, and you know, what is he doing this? And I said, well, fine, they don't have to come. This was God's plan for me. I didn't realize that, but it was God's plan for me to do this on February 8th, 2002, when I got down on my hands and knees and I put my life in God's hands. He had a plan for me. How did I know I was going to be studying Ephesians 6 this morning on how to spiritual warfare? Would I be here today with you reading these spiritual principles in AA? And there have been some rocky things that have happened, but he's been with me. And I don't give any credit to myself for doing these meetings. It's all God. He gave me a good brain. He gave me some talents that I've been able to put to work to carry his message. That's it. And I can't stop doing it. If it's just me and Stu and Mark, we'll be here. If it's just me, I'll be here. It's what God wants me to do. I did stop the Sunday meetings when we went back live in April, but during COVID, we did the three Zooms. I counted up, it's about 680 weeks, and about 2,100 meetings, and I've probably done 1,800, 1,900 of these. And eventually it started on Saturday morning, and Mark was still around. There's some people who've died who were at our first meeting, Wayne and Billy. There are people who have moved away. I talked to two of them this week, three of them. But it's been good for me. I think of the line on page 100, when we put ourselves in God's hands, the things that happen are better than anything I could have predicted. And that's always been a line for me. When we look back, we see the things that have God's done for us are better than anything we could have done or thought of. I'll get the exact words. When I look back, I realize that the things which came to me when I put myself in God's hands were better than anything I could have planned. Just unbelievable. It's a miracle. And we were talking before the meeting, I should have died. There were a few things that I did before I sobered up that I should have died, but I didn't. And I think everybody here today, it's a miracle. And then it says, follow the dictates of a higher power. You presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And so circumstances don't have to determine how I feel anymore. They used to run my life. Circumstances, people were my higher power. Today, it's only if I choose to let them be, or circumstances to be, that they are. And I always be in a new and wonderful world with God. And I'm the only one that can make it not new and wonderful. And so it's kind of special today. And people come back and they used to come to the old room and they'd know we'd be there. So that tells you something about AA. They knew we'd still be here. And anyway, I'm going to say the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me. Help me to glorify you today by carrying your message. In Jesus' name, amen. And really what we're supposed to do in our AA life is to glorify God. Is by doing his will, we're glorifying him. And focus on him and not ourselves. We finished Jim, but in honor of Mark, I'm going to review a little bit. I can't help myself. Jim was the example of they're trying to hammer home, we're on the first step in the big book, and you notice we're on page 36 and we're still on the first step with doctor's opinion. Why? Because people say, well, I didn't work the steps and that's why I drank again. I believe it's they've never taken the first step, or they took it and they didn't stay in it. And I believe once I'm surrendered by alcohol, not I choose to surrender, but I'm surrendered by alcohol in the first step, it changes me. And it gives me the desperation of a drowning man. And it makes me a God seeker. And I think you're changed when you get that gift of desperation. It's a gift from God. Now, there are people who get it and they allow the ego to rebuild, and then that gift goes away. And I've seen that so many times in AA. So please, if you have that gift of desperation, go with it. And I was talking to Jeremy before the meeting about sponsorship to me as someone who can take you through this book, read it with you, and show you the directions. That's why we started this meeting. These are specific directions to help me to be relieved from a hopeless condition of mind and body by God. And they're hammering home in this chapter, whole chapter on it, that we have an inability to bring into sufficient consciousness the humiliation and defeat of even a moment ago from alcohol, and we will drink again. What they're saying, and more about alcoholism, if you're a real alcoholic, you're going to drink. And if you don't want to drink, please follow the instructions in the book. Or if you have another way of doing it, you have a plan that'll work, fine. They're not telling you that this is the only way to get sober or have a spiritual life. But if you don't have a plan, try this one. Sandy Beach, who I love, did Saturday Morning Live. He did the 12 steps one a week, and they recorded them. And no matter what step he was on, he spent 20 minutes on the first step. And I have to keep that first step alive. I still remember how that feeling I had at 2:30 in the afternoon on February 8th. That, and Mark describes it, I've heard Ed and Stu and others describe that moment when I was completely done. I don't want to forget that. Father Leo says the purpose of going to an AA meeting is to remind yourself of your first, of that moment, to keep it alive. And so you don't forget it. We all say we're alcoholics, but are we taking the first step by coming here because we realize we can't do it alone. So Jim kept getting drunk. He was going to lose everything, wife, family. He's already working for the business that he owned. Get it? He shows up on Tuesday morning, irritated, arguing with the boss. Just a little bit, he said. Few words. We know what that means. Then he made a decision to go into the country to sell a car, and he knew there was a bar on the way. You see, you don't want to make decisions based on self when you're irritated and you're upset, because they're bad ones. And then he had no intention of drinking. We're on page 36. No intention. You believe that? No. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had a notion I might find a customer for a car at this place. You see how we justify, but you see the and rationalize, and you see the first drink starts way before you actually put it in your mouth. And then he says, I'd eaten there many times during the months I was been sober, but he had gone there for years, get the hint? So he'd done a lot of drinking there. Still no thought of drinking. And you see, he's telling himself this. Remember, Bill said, I'll just go down to the bar and hear some music. And immediately, he's thinking of three drinks. See, that's how alcoholics work. Still no, I ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Suddenly the thought, suddenly. You see, it's always there. And the thought crossed his mind. And once this thought crosses your mind, if you're a real alcoholic, you're screwed, because you have no power to say no to it. Now, people may be sitting in the room saying, well, I know when that's going to come, and I'm going to have the power. No, it's not going to happen. because that's what makes us an alcoholic. They're talking about the queer mental twist that precedes the first drink. So he had an ounce of whiskey. He put an ounce, just an ounce of whiskey in my milk. It can't hurt me. I got a full stomach. So I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. Now notice it's in squiggly writing. Squiggly writing is like important in the big book. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart. You see, if you still have a plan and you're following your plan, this is going to happen to you. This is going to happen. That's what the book says. And I felt, the experiment went so well, I ordered another one and poured it into milk. It didn't seem to bother me. I tried another and thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. Now, it doesn't tell us what happened to Jim. It's going to tell us what happens to Fred. We don't know if Jim ever sobered up because Jim failed to enlarge his spiritual life. That's what it told us. And if you don't enlarge your spiritual life and develop a relationship with God, then the only power that will say, bad idea is God. It's never going to be me. And why do we need the drink? Because we're separated from God. We live on self. We get irritated, restless, and discontent. We don't like the way the world's treating us. And we say, I need a drink. Or if things are going really well, I deserve a drink. So you see, you're screwed. Good day. This is a bad day. Jim drinks. Fred drank on a perfect day. We're going to read about him on Wednesday. Threat of commitment. So fear won't keep you sober. Then it said he had much knowledge about himself, so he was a smart drunk. He had the triggers written in his pocket drinking. You get it? Had triggers or group or knowledge about yourself. The only thing you need to know about yourself is you have no power not to drink. There is a power that can help you, and that I need to do the work in the book to treat my personality, because like Ed says, if I don't change, my sobriety date will. We need a personality change, a change the way we see the world, or we're going to drink again. And we need to get spiritual tools, so like Jeremy would say, on a bad day, sure, it's good to have somebody to call, but you're going to learn that when you're having a bad day, it's because you're seeing it as bad. And you're separated from God. And you're in fear or you're in anger. And we learn the prayers for fear and anger. And you just say them, God, I'm disturbed here. Good job, Michael. That's what God says to me. Good job, you did it again. Get back to me and shut up. And just do what I tell you to do. And all these ideas were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he would take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. Now, you know what? That could happen to me today. It could happen to Ed, Mark, any of us. It doesn't matter how long you're sober. It matters on your spiritual condition. And if you're in fit spiritual condition, you'll see the truth about alcohol. You'll react normally. And if you're not in fit spiritual condition, you won't. And we get a daily reprieve, which is a stay of execution, from alcohol if we have a relationship with God. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be there. So you don't want to get too far away. God is the magnet. We're the paperclip. And we need to be drawn close to God so we get his power. But if you pull a paperclip far enough away from the magnet, there's no power. And when you come in here, you're a paperclip and the magnet's God. And we tell you, start seeking, get close to God. And then every time you start seeking and you do a little bit of work with your sponsor and you're studying the book and you're reading and you're praying, you get closer to God. Because what I've been saying, and I've said it before, and I believe this, and I heard it from Mark Houston. It was so brilliant, I had to just stop what I was doing and replay it. He says, I have no choice not to drink today. The only choice I have is to seek the power that gives me choice. Am I seeking the power that gives me choice? If not, I'm on my own. It's true for anybody in this room. So it says, this is insanity. Insanity in the big book is such a lack of proportion, the ability to think straight on page 37. It's a lack of proportion, the inability to think straight. The insanity is that you take the first drink. It's insane if you're an alcoholic. Because it's always going to end up the same. Now, Father Leo describes how he took one drink And the lady says, well, he was 6 or 9 months sober, and he promised the bishop he wouldn't drink, or he was going to get big doo-doo. He was in England. And so the lady comes up, Father Leo, you're not having your gin and tonic. And he says, well, you know, she says, you can have one, Father. And he says, well, you know, I've been really good. So he had one, and then nothing happened. He went home. But he left his watch there. So he had to go back the next day. And he said the lion was awake. And then he ends up driving a car, hitting a tree in front of the parish house. And he's in the car, and he could see the truth. And it's very powerful. You can listen to him on XA Speakers, Father Leo B. He gives a talk, very powerful. And like Brian's pointed out, we can't see the truth from the false. We live a life where we can't see the truth about alcohol. And I couldn't. The other thing, I can't see the truth about my thinking. I believed everything I thought. I was always right. I was expert judgment on what was wrong with everybody. I know there are a few people in here that share that talent. And all that did was get me disturbed, get me upset, and I couldn't see that my fears weren't true. I believed all my fears. I could sit in the chair and get a fear, and all of a sudden, you know, there you go. I'm homeless. 7 o'clock, I'm eating dinner. 7:15, I've been in the chair, homeless, lost everything. Wife's left me, blah, blah, blah. You can do that if you're a really good alcoholic in like 30 seconds. You could take your life and completely destroy it sitting in the chair. The other thing you do if you're an alcoholic is you can sit in the chair at 7 o'clock and bring into the mind somebody that pissed you off that day. And you can get pissed off, and they're home watching Big Bang, and you've made them your higher power. How crazy is that? And then we drink over those things. So it says, you may think this is an extreme case, can't even talk anymore, I'm old. To us it's far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. They don't say you may have this. Every alcoholic understands this. Every alcoholic, real alcoholic, understands that they took the first drink when they shouldn't have. And they've done it when they didn't want to. They swore off. Anybody take the solemn oath and drink the same day? Anybody not? Anybody have a plan to quit? I always had a plan to quit tomorrow, right? It was never today. And I would block time for the quitting. And then on the quitting day, I realized, well, I don't have to quit today, I quit tomorrow. And there was a movie, a very famous movie called I'll Quit Tomorrow in the 40s about this. It was about alcoholism. I think it won the best picture. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always, and this is not read enough at meetings, but the curious mental phenomenon. Okay, you got a curious mental phenomenon in every alcoholic right now. But we have parallel to that on the other side of our brain, sound reasoning. So we go through the day, I've got sound reasoning, oh, alcohol's bad for me. But we got that curious mental phenomenon that's always there. It's there in me today. But sound reasoning didn't overcome the queer mental twist and sent some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. The trivial excuse is we pole vault over mouse turds. That's what alcoholics do. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. So if you think you've got a plan and you're going to be able to know and quit drinking, you're screwed. Because the plan has to be God is the only thing that can overcome the curious mental phenomenon. And he will. God can and will. We say it every meeting. He can and will. If he is sought, if he's awake in you. In some circumstances, we went out deliberately to get drunk. Anybody do that? Feeling ourselves justified. Why? Because of nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. Those are all the symptoms of an unmanageable life. So because we're managing our life, we've made unmanageable, we justify ourselves. Look at how they're treating me. We sing the self-pity song. Oh, I've been sober a month. She's so mean to me. The person at work, blah, 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 blah. It's just, yeah. Once you hear the sponsor starting to do it, you just get the violin out, you know. And I said, you know, I don't want to hear the self-pity song. I used to sing it. I was really good at it. Anybody sing it really well? Yeah. I mean, and it made sense at the time, but it was killing me. And what was killing me was me managing my life. The justification was insufficient in the light of what always happened. Now we're going to talk about the jaywalker in honor of Stu, because I love Stu. He's my buddy, and when he got his first big book, this is the pages he opened up to. And Stu had a bad experience. He drove, can I tell everybody? He drove on the highway home for about the 1,500th time in his life. But he had a little bit too much to drink, and he didn't know where he was. For those listening out there, there's only one way to go on I-70, and you're going to hit Topeka. So at 11 o'clock at night, he says, Siri, where's Topeka? And that was when God saved Stu's life, and he's here today. We all had to have those kind of things happen in our lives, that moment of defeat. And let's read about the jaywalker. The behavior in alcoholics is absurd. It's absurd and it's incomprehensible. I don't even think we can comprehend it. Certainly the people we love and around us can't comprehend us with respect to the first drink. They don't understand that. And the example, and notice it's not the second drink, it's the first drink. And a real alcoholic can only drink the first drink if they're thinking of what it's going to do to them, for them, not to them. Willpower will never work. Self-knowledge will never work, because right before you drink, you're going to only think of what it's going to do for you. It's going to relieve you of the bondage of self. And you start feeling better on the way to the liquor store. Anybody do that? Any addicts out here, you feel better when you get the pills or the drugs? You're already better. You haven't even taken them yet. You feel better, you got the booze. You're getting the relief. And once you think of that, your mind is not going to say bad idea. But if you've worked the steps and you have a relationship with God, you're going to say, well, you know, God, I'm in a bad situation here. I need your help. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Take away my fear, whatever, my agitation. And he will do it. He will absolutely always do it if we ask him. And if he's there. So here's the passion. We have a passion for jaywalking. Passion is a strong, barely controllable emotion. It's not even controllable. He gets a thrill, which is a sudden feeling of excitement and pleasure out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. Pretty weird, isn't it? He enjoys himself. He's having fun for a few years. Notice they're going to compare that, but not long, in spite of friendly warnings, people are saying, you know, your drinking's bothering me. Your drinking's bothering you. No, I'm okay. I've got control of this. Up to this point, you would label him as foolish chap, having queer ideas of fun. Now, if you're foolish with strange ideas of fun, the idea of jaywalking has power over you. So if you're foolish and you have strange ideas about alcohol, it has power over you. If you think it's going to help you, if you think it's going to relieve whatever it is. And how does alcohol get power over any of us? Because when we first drank, it worked. It was great. It gave us all the promises on page 83. Read the promises on page 83 and 4 and put alcohol in there. It gave me a sense of peace. I lost my fear of everyone. I've had a feeling of uselessness disappeared. I immediately knew how to handle any situation. And alcohol was doing for me what I could not do. But luck deserts him. Luck. We just have a bad luck. We drank and alcoholics, when they get the DUI, it's not because they drank the last drink. It's because they took the wrong street. They should have taken Wanamaker instead of 435. They wouldn't have gotten the Am I being silly? No, I don't think so. He's slightly injured several times in succession. So he's starting to get consequences. You would expect him, if he was normal, to cut it out. But presently he's hit again. Why? Consequences are getting worse, but he cannot recall them because they're replaced by the foolish and strange ideas of fun. See, the curious mental phenomenon cannot be overcome by sound reasoning in an alcoholic. He has a fractured skull. That's bad. I was a doctor. Fracturing a skull is bad. Within a week after leaving the hospital, so he's gone the treatment. He's in the hospital. And as he gets out, he breaks his arm. He's running out of things to break. He tells you, here it is, he has decided to stop it for good. And that's why doctors love alcoholics, because we all tell them we're going to quit. Even though it's the fifth admission for pancreatitis, oh, I'm going to quit. And where everybody's happy, the nurse says he's going to quit, and the doctor says, great, he's going to quit. And they're singing Kumbaya because they don't know how to deal with us. They say, well, you might want to go to AA too. See, and that's why they send us here, because they have no way to treat this. And AA has a way to treat it. It's called the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. The fellowship is important, but the fellowship is to bring you to the book. Hold that book up, Justin. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's the book, it's the steps. And then we have a fellowship of people who are doing the program. The fellowship is not the program. The program is the steps. The fellowship is to bring you to the program. But the decision, he can't follow through in the decision. In a few weeks, he breaks both legs. So people think we are really insane. You're such a weak-willed. If you just get strong-willed. But we can't, we don't have the power. Went through the years, this conduct, so now it's years of getting hit by car, accompanied by continual promises to be careful. I'll be more careful. I won't drink at all this time. To keep off the streets forever. Now here, he's going to be careful, which is control, and keep off the streets forever, which is choice. He has no power of control, no power of choice. Finally, he can no longer work. He tries, his wife divorces him, and he's held up to ridicule. Anybody relate to that? He tries every known means to get the jaywalking, and here it is, idea out of his head. We cannot get the idea out of our head that's going to come up at a certain time in an alcoholic. That's why your plan will never work without God, because only God can overcome that. So he shuts himself up in an asylum. That's a good idea. Hoping to mend his ways, but the day he gets out, he races in front of a fire engine, which breaks his neck. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? You may think our illustration is too ridiculous, is it? But is it? We who have been through the ringer. All right, leave me alone. I had this bridge. I get a little weird in there. Have to admit, if we substituted alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. However intelligent, now intelligence won't help. I had somebody tell me they had 143 IQ, but he's not here anymore. Didn't help him. I said, well, maybe you need 144. Maybe you need 145. Oh, boy. I'll tell you the stories. I'm praying for him. I'm going to give him a call later, see how he's doing. Where alcohol has been involved, we've been insane. Some of you are thinking, yes, but what you tell is true, but it doesn't fully apply to me. You hear that all the time. I'm a little different. I admit I have some of these symptoms, but I've not gone to the extremes you fellows did. You people come to AA, well, I haven't had DUI. They're always telling you how good they are when they come in here. Well, I haven't had DUI, and I still got a job and a wife. Well, great. Why are you here? Hello? You see, once you start thinking you're different or it's not bad enough, you're doomed. You have to be completely defeated. Blessed are the poor in spirit. That's how the Beatitudes start. Poor in spirit, broken. See the truth about your brokenness before God so you'll seek Him. And why? I understand myself so well after what you have told me that such things cannot happen. Was it that Rowan Hazard, he understood himself so well that he was drunk after a year of therapy after 3 days? We have not lost everything in life through drinking. And what they're saying is, I'm not that bad yet. And then I'm going to finish with this this paragraph. I'm sorry to talk too long today, maybe. That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people who, though drinking foolishly and heavily at the present time, are able to stop or moderate. There are people who can do that. Why? Because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were. And their brain hasn't been damaged enough. And their hard drinkers, who are given sufficient reason, can quit. Why? Because they haven't lost the power of choice. They do not, hard drinkers don't have the spiritual illness, so they don't need the spiritual solution. Willpower will still work for them. And there may be people like that in AA, that's fine. But if you're the actual or potential alcoholic, here it is, here's the warning. It always starts with but. With hardly an exception, will be absolutely squiggly writing, unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. This is a point we wish to emphasize and reemphasize, to smash home to our readers, and it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. Has this been revealed to you? Have you seen this truth in yourself? Now, if you haven't, then we can't help you. But if you've seen this truth in yourself, then this book is written for you. So I'll end with that, and then we'll finish this powerful chapter on Wednesday with Fred and the final instructions. So thank you. We had some birthdays today, so we went a little longer. Thank you very much.